Mitch, Mo, and I are so excited to be making this move over to Anchor. We've used quite a few different podcast platforms since we started the pod, and this is by far the best experience we've had. It's free, but it doesn't feel like it's free. Anchor distributes our podcast to every platform, so that no matter where you listen to your podcast, you can find the Sports Hour. And doing ads like these, we can generate revenue to help give you, the listener, a better show. If you have a podcast or you're thinking of starting a podcast, Mitch, Mo, and I highly recommend Anchor. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. It's a beautiful day. Great to be here. It's October, Mitch.
Dude, it is the first time in months it feels like that it hasn't been 90 plus degrees outside here in Chico. The fall season is finally among us. It starts to get darker a little bit earlier. The cool breeze starts to blow in. We got football back. Time to pop on that favorite flannel of yours and enjoy the fall season. Spooky season, baby. Let's go.
Are you a PSL, you know, pumpkin spice latte? Is that your vibe? I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I've ever tried one in my life.
They're tasty. I am not a pumpkin spice latte truther myself. You know what? Actually, I'm more of a basic bitch that way when it comes closer to Christmas and the eggnog lattes come out.
Oh.
Which okay. That because you and I both well-known fact here on the pod, love eggnog.
Yes.
So that's kind of more my speed is eggnog. Not so much the pumpkin spice, but I do enjoy a good pumpkin pie.
Sure. You know, I'm going to be honest. Maybe this is I wasn't ready to bring out the hot takes this early in the podcast, but I think pumpkin's a little overrated. Like pumpkin flavor as a whole is generally overrated for like this couple months stretch from like September to Thanksgiving, you know.
That's
like
spicy.
There are, pumpkin is a solid flavor, but there's too much of it and it's not that great that we should go so hard on pumpkin for like 2 months, you know. Yeah. Like not everything has to be pumpkin right now. We can, you know, there's some other great flavors out there that make you think of fall. I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan.
I think that's a spicy take, but I think that also it's like, what other time of year do you eat pumpkin? It's just this time of year. So like, if you're going to overdo it on pumpkin and you really love pumpkin, this is the time of year to do it.
I guess so.
I'm not going to hate on people that like want to overdo pumpkin, but you're right. I think it is a little overplayed and it's done like terribly in a lot of different things.
Yes. And what about the other gourds, huh? You know, no love for anybody else. Just pumpkins. There's got to be other family out there that feels neglected. That's all I'm saying. Think of the children.
Think of the children.
Goodness gracious. Oh man. Speaking of thinking of the children, Mitch, I'm going to go over the podcast real quick, and then we've got to get in to a bit of interesting, unpleasant, I don't know, kind of funny news from this weekend in the NFL. But here's the rundown.
It's funny if you're not him, so
or his family. Yeah. That's for sure. But yeah, so what we have in store today, obviously 4 weeks into the NFL season, this is traditionally the quarter mark of the season in a 16 game season. Unfortunately, the NFL has just really ruined that by adding the 17th game, but we're going to still look at four games as the first quarter of the season under wraps. And we're going to do some winners and losers from the first quarter of the NFL season. We're also going to get into college football with a new little segment. We'll tease that for now. Save that for a little bit later. So we'll be getting into some college football towards the middle of the podcast.
MLB postseason underway. We're recording this Tuesday, October 5th. So Yankees, Red Sox happening tonight in the one game playoff. Cardinals, Dodgers tomorrow night on Wednesday, and then we'll get right into the MLB postseason. So a little preview there before we wrap up with our quick picks. So that's what we've got in store today, Mitch. We do have to start with an infamous fellow here this weekend, Urban Meyer, who loses Thursday night football against the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincinnati. Obviously, longtime Ohioan Urban Meyer spent a while in Columbus. I guess stuck around for the weekend, right? You know, makes sense. He's already up there. They've got some extra time. So he's up there this weekend.
I believe he owns a sports bar.
Yes. Yeah, he does. It's called Urban Meyer's Pint House. It's got his name on it. In fact, it's got his name on. It's got pictures of him and his wife and, you know, sort of around the place. And
nice place.
Yeah,
it's a nice place.
Seems like a good spot. Well, he enjoyed it this weekend. And there was a video taken of him with a young woman. Who's sort of dancing in his lap as he's sitting on a stool. It was posted on Saturday night on social media.
Oh, no.
It's not a good look. And I'm going to be honest, when I saw this stuff emerge over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, I honestly thought it was fake. I didn't think it was real. I just thought it was like, here's this random man in Ohio who looks oddly similar to Urban Meyer with some young girl that he probably shouldn't be with. And now the internet's just sort of trolling. But Mitch, Urban Meyer and the owner of the Jaguars, Shad Khan, and the entire organization basically confirmed all this today, Tuesday morning, as he put out a statement apologizing for his behavior. Mitch, what a mess.
Yeah, I was with you. I thought it was fake. I was about to high five the sugar daddy that pulled himself a hot young chick. And I'm like, all right, all right. And then he turns around and it's Urban Meyer. I went, no high five. You're married. Shame on you, my friend. Look, a bad look in so many different directions. One, he's a married man. He's spoken for. What are you doing canoodling around with younger women in a sports bar that you own with pictures of you and your family all over the place?
Like him and his wife are like, there's an image of them above the stool that he's sitting on getting like grinded on by some 20-year-old chick. I mean, what is like, what's the thought process here? You know,
we've all heard the saying location, 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 like terrible location.
Of all the places. I mean, the behavior's like, bad. The location bad. Makes it even worse, right?
Just even worse. From a professional standpoint, really bad look. You can't suck and be a distraction to your team at the same time. And he's doing that right now. There's a lot of reports that he's, he's got maybe 1 foot out the door. He's, you know, on the super hot seat, only 4 games into his tenure. Of course, the rumors about the USC head coaching vacancy swirling around at the same time. Is he going to take that? It's just an all around bad look. You can't be going out like pulling a Robert Kraft and having tiddlywinks played with your Jimmy Wang, Urban. You can't do it. It's just, it's not a good look in the least. And if I'm Mrs. Meyer, I got some more than choice words for that guy.
Absolutely. Stick him in the guest house. You know, they're rich people. So they have like
the dog house. He's sleeping outside.
Their dog house is probably the equivalent of a very nice home is all.
That's true.
But that's probably true. You know, here's the thing. It's disappointing, obviously, from a public figure to behave, in this manner. It's tough. It's a tough look, though, Mitch, as you said, when you're a first time NFL head coach who is coming from the college ranks with no NFL experience. There are so many doubts about Urban Meyer already, right? There were skeptics before he even got hired. When the rumors of him being hired to pair him up with Trevor Lawrence, there was immediately like, ugh, I don't know if this works. I mean, we've had this conversation here on the podcast about the college coaches that go to the NFL level and the track record there. It's not always great. There are some successes, but there's been some epic failures to the highest proportions. And it seems like we're heading in that direction yet again, right? We're heading in the directions of, you know, what we saw with, you know, with Nick Saban and some of the others that have come up to the NFL level and just immediately flamed out. And you bring up USC. I love the conspiracy theory that this is some long-term play to get ousted from Jacksonville so he can take that job. I'm assuming he'd like this thing to work out in the NFL, right? But it does beg the question of, you know, if you're Shad Khan, why did you hire this guy in the first place? And what are you going to do about it now, 4 games into the season, in such a bad spot as a football team? Meanwhile, you have such a big distraction at the head coach position. You have a number one overall pick in Trevor Lawrence, who's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL through the first, you know, 4 games of the season. He should be showing, you know, you should be able to do a little better with a generational talent like that. So I'm curious about how this looks over the next 3 or 4 weeks. If they continue to lose, what's the leash for Urban Meyer after this sort of behavior, after something like this happens? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think this also shows a very big difference between college and pro football in culture, as far as when it comes to head coach, because when you look at college football, the head coach is like revered higher than the players in some situations, in a lot of situations. And I think Urban Meyer for a long time was in that position where he was, you know, he was revered so highly, and he, you know, he's the celebrity on campus more so than the players. And you can't just take that. That's not the culture in the NFL. In fact, spoiler alert, it's the players that are revered higher in the NFL. So you can't, like, not saying that you can be a distraction in college football and get away with it. But that sort of celebrity doesn't exist in the NFL. You can't take that to a professional organization. Let alone all the moral issues with all this.
Of course.
As far as the culture goes, the difference between the two, you just can't do it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I will add as well, you know, that relationship, the difference between an athletic director and a head coach of a college football team is a very different relationship than a head coach of an NFL franchise and an owner who is about the bottom line and about success and making money and creating a great product, not about the long term of building this up the student athlete, right? And all the other things that come into college football, you know, that power dynamic is different in that regard as well, not just coach to player. So Urban Meyer, you know, might have a longer leash at, you know, from an athletic director at an organization, you know, at a university where he could have some success. An NFL owner might not have that kind of patience. We'll see what kind of patience Shad Khan shows in this regard. And, you know, hopefully for the Jaguars, they get back in some winning ways so they can not have to talk about this kind of stuff and can talk about maybe some W's on the football field, you know? So we'll see what the future holds for them. But what a weird situation. What a weird thing that happened. I still can't believe it's real, but here we are. So,
yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Lowering the bar at the bar, Urban. You can't do that.
You can't do that. Oh, before we go, Mitch, I think you had something else to add here.
Of course he goes in the pit of misery. Dilly dilly. I mean,
dilly dilly dilly.
You know, and I feel like this isn't misdemeanor territory. This is felony territory. When you compromise your family like that, when you compromise, the perception of your character like that, when you compromise potentially your status as a head coach in the NFL, can't have it. That's felony status. The cot is hot for you, Urban Meyer, in the pit of misery, dilly dilly. And you don't get to bring your girlfriend. Sorry.
No, she's not invited. No. She
she belongs to the streets, Urban. Leave her out there.
Oh man. Incredible. Well, dilly dilly, Urban Meyer, enjoy it down there in the pit of misery. Mitch, let's get into our first quarter winners and losers for the NFL season so far. So we've got 5 winners, 5 losers. We're gonna go back and forth here on those. Mitch, let's start with you. Give us a winner to start with. You're thinking of the first 4 games of the season. Who's one of the biggest winners?
Let's start with Kyler Murray. Huge winner. I mean, looking like an MVP candidate, completing 76% of his passes, throwing for over 1,200 yards, almost 1,300 yards so far, 9 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. Also, the rushing right now, insane. I believe this is back-to-back. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of James Conner. The rushing is still a big part of his game. 23 for 109. He's got three touchdowns on the ground. I think what we're seeing out of Kyler Murray is he's not just a running quarterback. Like, it's not, you know, there's a difference between running and mobile. He's proving to be mobile because he's making a ton of throws on the run. He's showing to be a playmaker outside of the pocket. Almost Russell Wilson 2.0. Like, his ability to create outside of the pocket, find the open man. Kyler Murray is doing those sort of things. And when Russell Wilson was doing that, he was a perennial MVP candidate. And Russ is still doing that at a little bit of a slower pace. But Kyler is there what Russ was just a few years ago. He's got that Cardinals team on the right path. They're 3-1 to start the year.
4-0.
Sorry.
The only 4-0 team in the entire National Football League. And if you put the money on that, if you put the money on that bet, right, Arizona Cardinals, the last team standing without a loss, you just made a pretty penny this weekend, because nobody would have guessed that.
No, not at all. And this, his performance right now goes with the trend of him improving year in, year out. So Kyler, huge winner in the first quarter of the season.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, Mitch. You know, and I think not only is he a winner, but he is the MVP favorite right now through four games in this season. Not only, you know, does it help that you're 4-0 and you haven't lost, and obviously big part of the narrative with that award is winning. But you mentioned the stats. What's most impressive to me statistically, Mitch, is he leads the NFL right now in yards per pass attempt, 9.5 yards per pass attempt. And he's completing 76% of his passes, which is also, by the way, like tops in the NFL. And he's completing the most passes, and he's airing it out the most of any quarterback in the league. That is extremely impressive. Now, obviously, that's not sustainable over the course of the season, but we're seeing right now sort of the high end of what this Cardinals team is, what Kyler Murray is. Like you mentioned, the athleticism that he has is just so unique in this league. And he has really emerged this season as the guy to watch. And right now the Cardinals, the team to watch. So I love this. Right on board, Mitch, with Kyler Murray.
Yeah. You mentioned the yards per attempt, the yards per completion, 12.5 as well. And with a 115 quarterback rating, averaging 60 yards more per game through the year than he did last year. So huge step up for Kyler Murray and his arm.
I love it. All right, Mitch, let me give you a winner here. I'm going to go with the quarterback as well. And it's the quarterback of my team, Mitch. Sam Darnold is definitely a winner from the first quarter of the season. A winner just to get out of New York Jets, Adam Gase in that whole organization. But he has really flourished this season with Joe Brady in Carolina. And he's surrounded by so many more weapons than he ever was in New York. We've seen a breakout season from DJ Moore, who has just been incredible this year. One of the top five wide receivers so far this year. And Darnold has been great at what he's asked to do. He's got 1,100 passing yards, completing 67.8% of his passes, 5 touchdowns through the air, 5 touchdowns on the ground, 3 interceptions for Sam Darnold, and the team's 3-1. So not only is he playing well, but the team is winning. I think what we've seen from Darnold and what the Panthers have seen from Darnold is probably exactly what they were hoping for. You know, he has enough athleticism to make things happen. He's been smart with the ball, getting it to his playmakers. He hasn't, you know, made too many bad decisions, only a handful of interceptions. He's just doing what he's asked to do in this system, and it's working for him, and it's working for the offense. So I've been impressed with Sam Darnold. I hope he can maintain this level, at least close to it, throughout the course of the season. You know, still an early start, and you know, it's not like the Panthers have played the toughest schedule by any means, but an encouraging start for the Panthers and a very encouraging start for Mr. Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it always helps when you're put in a situation where the potential to win is there. That wasn't the case in New York, but I'm 100% on board with you. He's doing exactly what he's asked to do. And I think he was getting sacked and hit so many times in New York, we forgot that this guy's got some legs. Like, he's athletic. He, when he gets outside the pocket, he's not your traditional pocket passer. You're like, oh crap. You know, he's outside the pocket now, play over. Essentially, he's going to throw it away, or he's going to run out of bounds for, you know, to get back to the yard, you know, the line of scrimmage. That's not the case with Sam Darnold. He's being at, you know, he's in a position to win. He's made athletic plays. The arm has been, has improved. And that's, you know, obviously in part due to the fact that he actually has people to block for him, and he has a run game to help sustain, you know, his play. So, yeah, absolutely. Sam Darnold looks fantastic through these first 3 weeks or 4 weeks, excuse me.
Yeah. All right, Mitch, give us a loser this season. What's a loser for you?
Oh boy. How about Big Ben?
Ooh, yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks, yes.
Big Ben. It's been a rough go for Big Ben. We said this, I believe, last week. It was last week. It was we buying or selling that Big Ben was washed. And yeah, he absolutely is washed. So far through the first few games, he's completing 64% of his passes, just a little over 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Yards per attempt has been on a steady decline over the last 3 years. It continues to stay at that pace with a 6.1 yards per attempt. He's completing under 10 yards per completion. He just looks broken down. He looks like a guy that's taken so much abuse over the last, where are we at, 19 years that he's played? No, almost 19 years. I think 18 or 17 years that he's played. He just looks beaten up. It's time for the guy to hang him up. It's not indicative of like anything else other than the fact that he just looks beat up. That's all it is. And he's losing because he doesn't have the offensive line in front of him anymore. The defense hasn't been a terrible amount, a whole bunch of help. It's a bad situation for Ben. Bad situation for Ben to be at the end of his career.
Yeah, I mean, we're just seeing age, you know, rear its ugly head with Ben Roethlisberger this season. And, it happens with older quarterbacks, you know. This might be the year for Ben. And we sort of talked about this in the offseason. And this was one of my issues with this team moving forward and their, the lack of decision to find the future at quarterback while you still had Big Ben. And they're, you know, we're seeing the effects of that where they're forced to play him. I mean, they don't have a person to go to unless they're turning to Dwayne Haskins. Like, that's not better. So they've really put themselves in a bad spot. And Big Ben's been bad. He's been big bad. He's bottom five in QBR and passer rating. And the group that he's surrounded by, Mitch, is the rookie quarterbacks. And we're going to get to the rookie quarterbacks a little bit later. But that is not the right group of quarterbacks to be, you know, looped in that sort of rating. So he has been one of the worst quarterbacks to start this season. Pittsburgh is 2-2? 1-3.
1-3.
With a miracle win over the Bills in week one, right? Which, I mean, now seems like an eternity ago. The Bills have been fine, and the Steelers haven't been very good since. But it does not look good in Pittsburgh, and it doesn't look good for Big Ben. So I don't know what they do. Their inability to make that decision in the offseason has forced them into a position where they have to ride out Big Ben this year or make a big splashy move. And maybe it is to trading for Deshaun Watson for the future of what that could be, you know, if he's clear to these Chargers. Or maybe, you know, I don't know who else they go after that helps. Nobody helps them this season. They're screwed for this season. But the future holds, we'll find out. Maybe they're better off losing a bunch of games to get that top five pick, to get that number one QB. We'll see. But not good for Big Ben, and it just goes to show you have to be forward-thinking about these quarterbacks because you don't want to be in the position that the Steelers are in right now.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the big things I noticed, too, is, like, we've seen a lot of old quarterbacks, right? Like, that's kind of been, like, the narrative around quarterbacks is how long can we get them to play over the last couple of years? Because we've had guys like Tom Brady and Drew Brees play well into their later years.
Tom Brady's fantastic this year. And, you know, he's older than we've ever seen, you know? He doesn't seem like he's aging a bit.
But, you know, that's the difference between great quarterbacks and all-time quarterbacks. You know, Big Ben will be a great quarterback when it's all said and done. He'll be a Hall of Famer. But the difference between him and Drew Brees was Drew Brees was able to reinvent himself. When his body started to give up on him, he reinvented the way he played the game. He was never a big arm guy, but he realized, hey, I'm not able to push the ball down the field anymore. I got to check down a lot more. I got to be able to read coverages a lot better. Big Ben, even in his prime, and this is marked by the big interception numbers some years, is that he hasn't figured out a way to reinvent himself when things aren't going well. And I think that that's going to separate him from the rest of the quarterbacks when the career is all said and done, is that when push came to shove, were you able to find a way to win? And right now he's not finding that.
Yeah. You know, it's tough for the Steelers right now and definitely tough for Ben Roethlisberger. Mitch, I'm going to give, we have one more individual player in our winners and losers. I'm going to give that now. Mine's a winner. And it's on the defensive side of the ball, and it is defensive end Myles Garrett for the Cleveland Browns, who has, to me, been by far the best defensive player in the NFL so far this season. He leads the league in sacks, 6 sacks on the season for Garrett, 7 tackles for a loss, 19 tackles, tied for the lead on the team. And he's just been an absolute menace. And that defensive line, the defense for the Browns in general, has been really good. I didn't anticipate the type of impact that Jadeveon Clowney would have on this defense, but Mitch, it is for real, and it's part of the reason why Garrett is having such a good year. Is now, unlike years in the past with Garrett, you have another player on that defensive line in that pass rush to worry about, an athletic freak like Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, that is not a guy you could just leave one-on-one all day against your right tackle or left tackle. You can't do that. So when you have to pay that much attention to the other side, now Myles Garrett's getting a little better looks, right? He's getting a little more just one-on-ones or maybe a little chip from the running back, but that's it. Like, he has been unleashed in a way he hasn't before, and we're seeing the results of it. He should be the favorite and defensive player of the year right now. He's been on an absolute tear through 4 games, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon. Garrett is a definite winner in the first quarter of this NFL season.
Yeah, hard to double-team 2 guys on the offensive line. You kind of pick your guy and you go with it. And when Jadeveon's that guy, I mean, that just frees Myles Garrett up. I almost said Myles Gaskin. That's not true. Myles Garrett. A clear winner in this first half. I believe he was one of the guys that I mentioned for defensive player of the year in their awards predictions podcast. And I stand by that. I stand Myles Garrett. Did I use that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Hey, okay, well good. I stand Myles Garrett. Look at me. I'm with the cool kids. the guy's a monster. That whole defense is unreal, right? They've played outstanding. This is one of those defenses that you fear. You start to sweat just thinking about how to game plan against the Cleveland Browns defense. And when you got a monster like that, that you can't double team all the time because you got Jadeveon Clowney out there on the side. So you got to pick and choose who you're going to double team, man. That's tough. Myles Garrett, absolute monster.
Yeah, no doubt. And that Browns team 3-1, Mitch, their only loss on the season coming to the Kansas City Chiefs. Mitch, how about you give us another one, winner or loser here? Where do you want to go?
Let's get another winner out there. Positive vibes only here on this podcast. Let's go with the entire AFC West. The AFC West division race as a whole, and specifically, and I say the entire AFC West, but you know, specifically Chargers, Broncos, and Raiders fan bases, they have something to look forward to here. Now, I know the Broncos, they were 3-0 going, they lost this last week. They were 3-0 going into this week, and their combined opponents' records before this week was 0-9. Okay, so they beat 3 teams that hadn't yet won a game. Fair enough. But they look semi-competent. They look fairly good. The Chargers, if you didn't watch that Monday night game last night, looked really good.
Great game.
They played very fast. And the Raiders, I think, had a bad night. And we'll get to that right now. Incompetent coach of the week, offensive coordinator Greg Olsen of the Las Vegas Raiders gets incompetent coach of the week. Play calling was absolutely horrendous there. It wasn't willing to take a chance on that Chargers secondary. And when you keep getting stuffed in the ground game, you have to try something different at some point. seemed reluctant to do so, and you have the number one pass in the NFL at this time, and you're not willing to pull the trigger. That's incompetency in my book. So congratulations, Greg Olsen. Not the all-time tight end.
Not the beloved Panther Bear legend, Greg Olsen.
No, not him.
We would never.
He's a lovely man.
Great, by the way. I got to hear him on the call for the Cowboys Panthers game this week.
Oh, he's great in the booth.
And he is a fantastic color guy there. He does a very good job. I love Greg Olsen. I loved hearing him call the games. Sorry, other Greg Olsen.
Yeah. But you know,
do better.
With the Chiefs having those early struggles, and these teams kind of getting off to hot starts, this makes this race so much more fun, especially for the other three fan bases, because you're not just conceding to the fact that we're going to fight for second and maybe get a wild card. You know, now you actually, there's some competition there. We look at the SRS, right, which is a sabermetric used in football. It's a simple rating system, which is a team quality relative to the average, which is zero. The SRS is basically a mathematic equation that involves margin of victory and strength of schedule. So it takes those two factors and you get essentially what your quality rating is, your SRS. The only division in all of football where all teams are in the positive as far as SRS goes is the AFC West. So, you know, technically by sabermetric standards, and obviously there are sabermetric truthers and debunkers out there, by sabermetrics, this is technically the best division in football. Now, the eye test tells you something different. Maybe it's the NFC West, you know, maybe
AFC West certainly has a claim to it through four weeks. That's
absolutely
for sure.
Absolutely. But you know, just numbers speaking, this is the best division in the entire NFL, and it's exciting football over there on the West Coast in the AFC.
Yeah, no, I love this one. I think the AFC West division race is a big winner, and it's because, you know, as you said, it seems like a foregone conclusion coming into the season that the Chiefs will win the division, and maybe the Chargers and Raiders are competing for a wild card. Maybe if the Broncos, if it all breaks right, they're competing for a wild card. Like, I mean, but now all those teams are ahead of the Chiefs. Now, early in the season, I'm sure the Chiefs will be fine. They're going to have to play each other a lot. We're going to have some key division games that will, you know, in large part determine this. But all four of these teams have a legitimate claim to being a factor in this division race. The Los Angeles Chargers have a great defense and a very strong offense. The Las Vegas Raiders, that offense has been incredible to start. That pass rush is for real. That Denver Broncos defense is legitimately a top five unit in the NFL. All three of those teams have something to hang their hat on to say, we can hang, we can compete. We'll see how it all plays out over the course of the season, but a definite winner early on in this season is how competitive this AFC West division has been. Mitch, I'm going to give a loser here another division race. This one not going so well. And we're going to talk about first quarter loser here, the AFC East division race. The other side of the country here in the conference. Bills win this division last year. A clear favorite going into this year, no doubt. But you looked at the Dolphins at 10-6. With a lot of promise. They were going to probably be a playoff team, maybe even competing with Buffalo, depending on what sort of regression we saw from Josh Allen and that Bills team. The New England Patriots retooling. Bill Belichick, you thought, you know, maybe they're going to be around 500. Maybe they're competing for a wild card spot. And the New York Jets, I think, even with the rookie, people were high on Robert Saleh. People were high on some of the moves they made. And there were thoughts that this could be a sneaky 6-7 win team potentially. Through four games, Mitch, the Buffalo Bills are 3-1. The Dolphins, Patriots, Jets all 1-3. And things do not look good for any of them. The rookie quarterbacks, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, early struggles in this season. Miami 1-3. The injury to Tua Tagovailoa has really sort of hampered their hopes as Jacoby Brissett attempts to sort of wade, you know, the water here as they await the return of Tua. And meanwhile, the Bills seem to be rolling as they have. this division race kind of seems over already. I don't see how any other team wins this other than Buffalo. And I didn't anticipate that going into this season. I thought Miami would be pretty strong. I thought New England would be competitive. So I'm chalking this up as a loser for what could have been an interesting division race that already seems like it's over.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked about SRS. The Buffalo Bills are the only one in that division with a positive SRS. And the differential between their simple rating system and the next closest one, which is the New England Patriots, is almost 20 whole points. With the Buffalo Bills sitting at 16.7 and the Patriots sitting at -3. So, you know, I thought at the beginning of the year, honestly, that it was the Bills division to lose to begin with.
Sure.
But I thought that there was going to be more competition with teams.
Yeah. Miami won 10 games last year, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like, they missed the playoffs, but they were a 10-win team. We all thought, and they still could. Early in the season, you get Tua healthy, you know, we'll see. But, I mean, I thought it'd be closer for sure, you know?
You'd think they'd at least be 2-2. You know, you thought that they would at least maybe even be 3-1 and tied in that division race with them. This is the Bills division to lose. The other teams have, and Miami's caught some bad breaks, right? They've caught some bad breaks with the injuries and everything. The Jets are still bad, and the Patriots definitely aren't what they thought they were going to be.
No, they're feeling the rookie court QB struggles just as much as all the other teams. You know, they're New England.
Exactly.
Maybe by the end of the season, it turns out a little better as Mac Jones gets some more game reps underneath. But for now, been an early struggle. Mitch, speaking of, we should probably hit this loser. We've kind of teased it a bit and we're kind of talking about it here. You have a loser here. Seems relevant for what we're talking about, the AFC East.
Rookie quarterbacks, man. Rookie quarterbacks. And this was supposed to be, you know, one of the greatest rookie quarterback draft classes of all time. You know, you look at all the names, you got Trevor Lawrence, you got Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, you got all the big names, and they just have not shown up one bit. Justin Fields thrown into a tough situation. Wasn't going to be the starter. Now all of a sudden he's the starter because Andy Dalton's hurt for a bad offense. Mac Jones thrust into it from the beginning. They cut Cam Newton. We didn't even think he was going to be the starter until they cut Cam Newton.
Right.
So he's thrust into that situation. Zach Wilson, talented quarterback, but thrown into a terrible situation with a new head coach and a poorly run organization in the New York Jets. I think honestly the best situation probably was Trey Lance, and he probably had the least amount of possibility he could have played because of who he was playing behind, Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, now Jimmy G gets hurt. He gets thrust into the starting role, and he didn't look bad, by the way, 9 for 18 and 2 touchdowns on Sunday. But, you know, these rookie quarterbacks and the teams that they're playing, were we too high on this draft class and expecting too much out of them, out of the draft? Or is this, do you think this is something completely normal we're seeing?
Rookie quarterbacks always struggle, Mitch. And I think that the Justin Herberts, the Baker Mayfields, those are the exception to the rule of rookie quarterbacks. Typically, rookies are going to struggle, especially first half of the season.
Sure.
What you would expect is that the first half of the season and the second half of the season, if you split them into two and compared them, would be very different seasons of football, that you would see a drastic improvement over the second half. And that would give you that hope going into the sophomore season that, you know, this guy's going to figure it out. But it has been early struggles. And, you know, I think you said it well with all the anticipation around this quarterback class, right? Five guys drafted in the first 15 picks, right? Three guys, you know, drafted in the top four top three. I mean, there were a lot of expectations. I don't think that it's now these guys are all busts or now they're all failures or this wasn't all good ideas, but just that, you know, this is the cost of drafting a rookie quarterback. You know, have to remember that if you're drafting in the top five of the NFL draft, you're likely not a very good team. with not a very good roster, and therefore you're not going to win a lot of games, right? Trey Lance, exception here as the Niners move up. And even last year, I mean, they were an injury riddled team who went to the Super Bowl the year before, clearly not the third worst, you know, or even the 10th or, you know, 12th worst team in the NFL. So, you know, Trey Lance aside, it has just been a struggle. Trevor Lawrence started all the games for the Jags. He's completing 57% of his passes, 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Zach Wilson started all 4 games, completing 56.8% of his passes, 4 touchdowns, 8 interceptions for Wilson. Mac Jones also started all 4 games. He's at 70%, 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, but his passer, you know, his average pass depth is extremely low. They're not asking or even trusting Mac Jones to do very much. And his only win is against a fellow rookie quarterback, Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson has 1 win. Mac Jones has 1 win. Has Justin Fields won a win? He's got a win as a starter, right, with the Detroit Lions this last week. So what? Yep. That's 3 wins in the first, you know, we're talking about 20-ish starts for these rookies. It has been bad. Pump the brakes on any of these guys being a bust. I think all of them. The ones that have gotten full-time starts, and even guys like Lance and Fields who have sort of come in for a couple games and we might see more over the next little bit. They've all shown flashes of why they were so highly touted, of why teams were so interested in them, and what the potential could look like, you know, down the line. So positive things to hold on to if you're the fan base, but definitely losers for the first quarter of this season, as it has been a definite struggle.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
To go along with this one, Mitch, we have another loser. And this is, you know, related to this. It's the veteran quarterbacks who were supposed to start ahead of some of the rookie quarterbacks. You know, I mentioned Jones, Lawrence, and Wilson, all those guys free reigns to the starting job at, you know, week one. But we talk about Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo gets the start, and now he's banged up. It seems like Trey Lance is going to get the opportunity. Who knows if Jimmy Garoppolo gets his job back once he is healthy. Depends on how Trey Lance looks and how this Niners team plays. You look at Justin Fields with your Bears. You know, Andy Dalton, early season struggles. He's got injuries. They throw in Fields. I know Nagy has said Dalton's healthy, he's the guy. It's easy to say now. It's going to be harder to say if Justin Fields has won 3 games in a row and is dealing in the locker rooms, you know, behind the kid. It's going to be hard to give the job back to Andy Dalton. And even not a first round pick, but Davis Mills, 3rd round pick, first selection for the Houston Texans. Tyrod Taylor gets the start to the season, wins game 1, has a great first half of game 2 before he's injured. Now Davis Mills in place of Tyrod Taylor has not looked good. Don't know if Taylor's going to be back this year, but even if he does, they're not giving him the ball back. They're motivated to lose now if you're the Texans. So not a good time to be one of those veterans ahead of those rookie QBs, because you might not get your job back even when you get healthy. It's going to be, you know, it could be a tough rest of the year for those guys.
Oh, very tough. And I mean, I said it before the pod. I think the Bears are the big loser here because we have another week of Matt Nagy, because we accidentally won this week against the freaking Detroit Lions. Look, yeah, I'm 100% on board with you. I mean, you know, these guys, they have these starting jobs, they get hurt, and then the rookie comes up and outperforms them. And yeah, that makes you a loser in this situation. It's a weird catch 22 where no one wins in this situation because
the rookie wins because they get all the reps and the opportunity. So, you know, that helps.
I mean, look at the situation of Justin Fields. He gets thrown into a bad offensive line. With now a banged up run game, David Montgomery, we don't know if David Montgomery has a torn ACL or not. You know, that's a bad situation for them to be in. So, you know, and I mean, Zach Wilson, super talented, but definitely doesn't have a whole lot going on for him offensively in New York.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah. His head coach is, sitting at bars getting, you know, flirting with 20-year-old chicks on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a bad situation. No one wins. No one wins if you're a quarterback, unless you're like the outright starter. If you're not the outright starter, then you don't win in this day and age right now. So, Yeah, everyone loses if you're a veteran quarterback and you have a rookie behind you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mitch, we've got one more winner, one more loser. Let's go to you for your final winner here, first quarter of the NFL season.
Yeah, we're going to stay in the AFC East, and we're going to go to the Buffalo Bills, and specifically their running backs. Now, one of the things that you and I were extremely critical of last year about the Buffalo Bills was their run game. We were raving about the pass offense and Josh Allen and how great that passing game is, how great the defense is. Sean McDermott leading a true winner, a group of warriors to an AFC East title. We love everything about the Buffalo Bills, but we said that there was one thing that was going to hold them back when it comes to playoff time and them being true Super Bowl contenders was the run game, because you have to be able to establish that early, and they weren't able to do that. 2021 tells a completely different story. This team has turned it around on the ground. Devin Singletary so far averaging 5.3 yards a carry. Zach Moss averaging 4.2 yards a carry. He's been a bruiser in goal line situations. He's got 3 touchdowns already on the ground. Josh Allen continues to be athletic on the ground. You know, they're just – this whole team seems to be – they're not centered around the run game in any means, you know, by any means whatsoever. Obviously, the pass game is still their go-to thing. But they have something to supplement it and something to set up the pass. And that was one of the big things that we criticized them on. The Bills' run game is night and day different from what it was in 2020. And I'm super excited to see if this is sustainable for them and through the long haul, if this makes them even more, even bigger contenders for a Super Bowl run. I think it will, because I picked them to win the Super Bowl. So I sure hope it does.
Well, it's looking good so far, you know, and like this is this, as you said, this is sort of the one question about the Bills. Would they be able to at least consistently run the ball? And we've seen it this so far this season. If you look at 2020, Mitch, the Bills were 20th in the NFL in rushing offense, averaging 107 yards per game on the ground. Through 4 games this year, they're averaging 145 yards on the ground, and that's good for 5th in the NFL. So that's the type of improvement that we're seeing from this Buffalo Bills team. And that's going to help any sort of regression you see from Josh Allen. It's going to take more off of his plate. It's going to pay off down the road in the playoffs when you can have a more balanced attack. And it's going to help you win games during the regular season. So absolutely, it seems like things are going well for the Bills right now in that regard. We'll see how well they can sort of maintain that over the course of the season. But Devin Singletary is averaging over 5 yards a carry. Zach Moss is averaging over 4 yards a carry. So these guys are running the ball really well. This offensive line is solid. It was always sort of weird why they couldn't run the ball better. Not that they were horrible. I mean, 28th in the NFL, not bad. But you just always felt like they could be so much better. And we're finally sort of seeing it this season. Definitely a big winner so far.
Oh, 100%.
So 100%. Final one here. The last one we have is a loser, Mitch. And the loser here is the Kansas City Chiefs defense. The Chiefs, you know, obviously, I mean, you could say they are one of the losers in this season so far at 2-2, just because of the high expectations we have for the Chiefs. But it's not the offense that has been any sort of issue. It's not Patrick Mahomes that's been an issue. It's been the Chiefs defense, which has been just absolutely awful. They're bottom 10, bottom 8 in the league, and basically every offense, you know, defensive category. Pass completion, they're giving up 69% of passes completed by the opposing defense. That's sixth. They're sixth in yards given up through the air. And then on the ground, Mitch, third most rushing yards allowed so far this season, averaging, you know, tied for the most yards per carry, 5.4 yards per carry on the ground, and 8 rushing touchdowns allowed so far this season by the Kansas City Chiefs. And as good as the Chiefs are, as good as the offense is, and, you know, I think they did a good job addressing the weaknesses there, especially on the offensive line. This offensive line has been one of the best units in the NFL this season, but they didn't address a lot of, you know, the issues along the defense. They have no pass rush. They can't stop the run, and, you know, a couple injuries and they will be completely decimated. So that is a major concern for me right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm curious to see what kind of moves they potentially make ahead of the trade deadline to shore up a defense for what should be a Super Bowl contender, but definitely a concern early on how porous this defense has been. Patrick Mahomes and that offense could put up points, but you cannot expect this to be a Super Bowl contender with a defense this bad.
No, you and I talked about it last week of, are we worried about the Chiefs? And we both were like, no, absolutely not. But if this continues into week 7-8, then I think it's time to be a little bit worried about the Chiefs if they can't step up defensively. We talked about SRS earlier, and this is my new favorite stat, so I'm going to bring it up for a third time in this segment. Part of what margin of victory and strength of schedule determines is your offensive SRS and your defensive SRS. The Kansas City Chiefs have the highest differential between your offense, between their offensive and defensive SRS. Offensive at 20.1, their defense at a minus 13.3. That is the worst in the AFC. By comparison, the highest defensive SRS is 17.8, and that would be their division rival, Los Angeles Chargers. So, a huge discrepancy in defense as far as that division goes, which makes me question if this is their division to lose or not. You know, serious questions need to be answered on the defensive side of the ball. I have a lot of faith in Andy Reid as a head coach to adjust for that. We need to stay, actions speak louder than words. We need to see something done before the trade deadline to help shore up that defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely. It might be fine in the regular season. It's going to become a huge liability come playoffs. If this defense doesn't improve.
100%.
Mitch, that's it for our winners and losers for the first quarter of the NFL season. Crazy. We're already 4 weeks down and 14 weeks to go. 18 weeks of the NFL season, 17 games this year. It is exciting to have that little extra game there, you know.
It is.
It'll be fun coming that, you know, that first week of January when we still have some regular season football, that extra game. Then it'll be like, all right, yeah, I can dig this, right? That's pretty good. So, all righty, Mitch, that's it for our NFL coverage here. We're going to take a quick break, go to a mid-roll, and when we come back, college football, MLB postseason, and our quick picks. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. Thanks for hanging with us through that break. Dallin, let's get into our brand new segment. It's going to be a little weekly occurrence on here. We're excited to do it. You and I both big football guys, but big college football guys now. You have your BYU Cougs. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Top 10 team in the country now, by
hey,
the way.
Hey, yeah.
And
not
I got
too shabby.
I got you know, my beloved Alabama Crimson Tide, Roll Damn Tide.
Longtime fan.
But we're going to call this one the Sports Hour Campus Tour. And basically what this is it is like our traveling college football show, but we're right here at home while we're doing it because we don't make that kind of skrilla. So we can't travel around to different campuses. Maybe one day.
Hey, I'd love to visit Tuscaloosa.
So, you know, make sure to become a member on Anchor. So maybe we can afford some of those traveling college football shows. And maybe we'll do a little BYU show, one of these. Maybe we'll go out to Utah. We'll
oh, yes, BYU that would be fun.
But Dallin, let's get into it. Top 10 rankings.
Yeah, so how this will work every week, folks, is we're going to just use the campus tour as a way to take a look into the world of college football, where things stand, and give you sort of the simplified what you need to know. So we're going to start off every week looking at the AP top 10 rankings and maybe the changes that we saw from the previous week. So to go through these real quick, Alabama remains the number one team in the country. Georgia, number two. Iowa moves up a couple spots to number three. Penn State at number four, rounding out the top five, is the Cincinnati Bearcats, coming off of the defeat of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the top five. Six through 10 goes Oklahoma at six. Ohio State moving into the top 10 this week at number seven. Oregon falling from number three all the way to number eight. Michigan moving in the top 10 at number nine. And as you mentioned, Mitch, the BYU Cougars moving into the top 10 here at number 10. So just, sort of wanted to discuss a few things here, some interesting happenings in the world of college football. Mitch, last week we saw the top two teams in the country, Alabama and Georgia, absolutely decimate SEC competition, who were expected to be good, right? Arkansas, ranked eighth in the country last week. They fall all the way to 13. Ole Miss, ranked number 12 in the country. They fell to 17. Both those teams didn't stand a chance against Alabama and Georgia. It seems like those are clearly the two best teams in the country. I know you're an Alabama guy, but is there any question that Alabama is the number one team in the country, or does Georgia deserve some credit here in this conversation, and maybe the Bulldogs should be the number one team in the nation?
No, there's no question. There's no question.
I mean, not that you're biased or anything, but you know.
No, but not that I'm biased. No, I mean, look, what Alabama does defensively, I mean, they had a really great quarterback to match up against this week. Matt Corral, Ole Miss, looked fantastic leading up to this game and still looked pretty good in this game. He was 21 for 29, 213 and a touchdown. Ole Miss never got the run game going, and that's typical of Alabama. Have the shutdown defense that can shut down the run game. Alabama's offense is just too damn good. Just too damn good. Bryce Young, 20 for 26, 241 and two. Brian Robinson Jr., 36 touches on the ground for 171 and four touchdowns. I mean, ran the ball all over the Rebels. There's just no doubt. Now, Georgia, great team, but there's one king in the SEC, and that's Alabama. And for me, until Alabama shows me otherwise, I don't think there's an argument about this. They haven't shown me anything to not believe that they're not only the best team in the SEC, but the best team in the country. Georgia was great. Shut out the Razorbacks, came into this game eighth ranked in the country. Stetson Barrett didn't have to do much of anything for Georgia. James Cook didn't really have to do much anything for Georgia either. There's great defense. Arkansas, I want to like Arkansas, but there's just, you know, there's too many question marks.
You can't, after getting shut out in a week. You're the eighth best team in the country. You can't score a point. I mean,
KJ Jefferson looks terrible. The run game looks terrible. I mean, they were absolutely stifled by Georgia. Georgia's got a great defense, by the way. But to me, until Alabama shows me otherwise, there's no question that they're the best team, not only SEC, but in the entire country.
You know, I think that's a fair point, Mitch, because, I mean, you look back at last season, in the last two seasons, Alabama has lost zero games. They haven't lost a single game in the span of the last two seasons. Undefeated last year and 5-0 so far this season. Wins over number 14 Miami, who, you know, may or may not be that good. Win at Florida, number 11 Florida in Gainesville, and then beating number 12 Ole Miss at home this last week. So the resume is strong, and as you said, they haven't shown a moment of weakness. That Florida game was close, but Florida's a solid team. I'm with you there. But on the other hand, Mitch, Georgia is playing incredible. They have been, to me, the most impressive team so far this season. One, beating the number three team in the country, Clemson, week one of the season. That is, I know Clemson not what it is right now, but that was the number three team in the country at the beginning of the season. We know how good Clemson is. That's not an easy game to win, and to absolutely stifle that offense the way that they did, very impressive to me. And then you mentioned the shutout of Arkansas, 37-0. They also shut out Vanderbilt the week before, Mitch.
Oh, but it's Vanderbilt.
The last 2 weeks,
That's Vanderbilt, though.
They combined to beat their last two opponents, Mitch, 99-0. 99-0. Tell me
one of them was Vanderbilt, though. One of them was Vanderbilt.
That's not impressive.
It is impressive, but that's Vanderbilt.
In five games this year, Mitch, the Georgia Bulldogs have given up 23 points. 23 points over the course of the entire season. That's just incredible. And I like you can point at a couple bad teams.
It's 30 points. They gave up a touchdown to UAB. So
they gave up a touchdown to UAB, 23 points, 7 points to UAB, 3 points to Clemson, 13 points to South Carolina.
We just learned something. Mitch can't do math.
Okay, that's okay. So. That's fine. The point is that this defense is by far the best unit in college football on any side of the ball on any team, in my opinion. And that Alabama offense might be just a tick below it, but this Georgia team has been very impressive. And I think beating two top 10 teams, maybe they warrant a little look at number one. And now I will say the next stretch here favors Georgia in terms of jumping Bama in the rankings. They get at number 18 Auburn this week. Kentucky's ranked number 16. They have them the week after that. And then 2 weeks after that, against the Florida Gators, who are right now number 20 in the country. Bama's got Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Tennessee. None of those teams ranked here over the next couple of weeks. So a couple more ranked wins for the Bulldogs. It'll be hard to keep them at number two in the country. Either way, Mitch, as long as neither of these teams lose, we're going to be looking at an SEC championship game against the number one and number two team in the country, with both those teams well on their way, likely to the college football playoffs. So in the end, it won't really matter who's one or two, but it is a fun debate to be having this early in the season.
I mean, I just think that Georgia, great defense. I just don't think that UAB, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt are impressive wins.
Well, Southern Miss and Mercer are not very impressive wins for Alabama.
They have Florida. They throw Florida in there. That's an impressive win.
Florida's a solid win, but Miami's not very impressive. Miami's an okay team, you know? So,
and you could put that in the same conversation as Clemson. So,
sure,
like,
absolutely.
And when you look at if you want to talk about quality wins, Alabama has more quality wins right now than Georgia.
I disagree. I still think Georgia has more quality wins. Clemson because is both garbage. Those teams were top 10 teams. And I think that matters, but either way,
Clemson was a top 10 team because of where they finished the season prior.
Sure.
That's why Clemson was a top 10 team.
I mean,
Clemson
they've been one of the
not...
most consistent programs of the last 5 years, you know, undoubtedly. So,
yeah, but yeah, the last 5 years, but they're garbage.
Well,
they're a dumpster fire.
They're not garbage. They are 3-2. So it's not horrible, but definitely not what we anticipated from the Tigers. That's for sure. Either way, these are clearly the best two teams in the country, and I'm curious to see how this shakes out and just anticipating that SEC championship game at the end of the year will likely be the top two teams. Mitch, another note here on the top five, Cincinnati breaking into the top five. First time since the Boise State run years ago in the mid-2000s that we've had a group of five team rank in the top five of the AP poll. Cincinnati was in the top 10 all last year. You know, I thought they proved their worth very well over the course of the season and starting off strong this year again, beating Notre Dame, who is a top 10 team in South Bend on the road. Very impressive for the Bearcats. They're in a position, Mitch, where they should win out in the AAC. And if they're 12-0 at the end of the year with an AAC championship, it's going to be hard to leave them out of the playoff. It's going to be hard to put a one or two loss team ahead of them. And there's going to be one or two lost teams competing. There's not going to be many other undefeated teams at the top of that list. So Cincinnati passing the biggest test so far this season with Notre Dame, setting themselves up to be in this conversation as long as they can win out.
Yeah, Cincinnati far outperforms their conference. Like they're just, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of their conference. And this was the prove it game for them against Notre Dame, and they got the job done. The rest of their schedule is concerning, just based off the strength of it. Temple, UCF, Navy, Tulane. So can they sustain a good enough argument to maintain, you know, that being that level, you know, being that caliber of a team? They don't actually have after this Notre Dame game, they don't play another ranked opponent until November 20th when they play number 24 SMU. So They're gonna have to actually put together probably some blowouts here.
Yes.
For them to maintain, and I think they can. Temple's not a good program. Temple was a farce when they were a top 15 team in the country. They were a farce. Tulane's not good. South Florida has fallen off. Tulsa is very bad. So you know you have some games where you have the opportunity to blow teams out and make yourself look a lot better. But I do think that Cincinnati is a very good team, and they're very deserving of being a top five team in the country right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And as the Bearcats get into conference play here in the American, that's going to be the question is, over the course of the season, when everyone else keeps playing power five teams, ranked opponents, keeps getting big wins, can Cincinnati sort of keep pace by blowing out their conference mates? You mentioned that SMU game on the 20th of November. I also think UCF in a couple weeks on October 16th. That's a good team. Not ranked, but UCF is a solid football team.
They're no pushover. Yeah.
Those are probably the biggest tests remaining. And both of those, Mitch, at home. So a break on the schedule there for the Bearcats as far as that goes. So the question will be is if they're 12-0 at the end of the season, you beat Indiana on the road, power five opponent, you beat Notre Dame as a top 10 team on the road. Is that going to be enough plus a 12-0 schedule in a record plus the inevitable truth of you joining the Big 12 in a couple of years? That's what I'm curious to see. Do the Bearcats and Mitch, as we talk about the final team I want to bring up here, the BYU Cougars, who are now number 10 in the country at 5-0, do they get any benefit of the doubt here in the rankings because they may be group of five teams now? They may not be in the power structure this season, but in 2 or 3 years, both those teams will be in the Big 12 and will be considered, you know, with a seat at the table as these other teams. Do they get any benefit from that this season? We'll find out over the course of the season. We'll find out when the playoff rankings come out for the first time, where the playoff committee ranks these teams. So far, the AP voters are giving them their just due. Cincinnati at number 5 and BYU now at number 10.
Well, BYU, they beat a good team in Utah. They beat Arizona State, which is still a top 25 team.
Now just re-entered the top 25 last week. Yes. 22 now.
Win a tough game against Utah State, which I think Utah State is a formidable opponent. I mean, they're solid. Then you get the win against UCF, and Arizona was their first game of the year. So yeah, you know, they're beating good teams. They're beating very good teams. I know your boy, is it Jalen Hill? Jalen Hill.
That's close. Kind of, somehow. Both Jaren wrong, Hall. But somehow close.
I know. Yeah. Wrong, but also not totally wrong. Jaren Hall has looked very, very good. He's just done a fantastic job with this team. BYU, they're contenders, man. They're contenders. They're teams that they're, that's a team that plays really good defense, does enough on offense, and is a really good. They have really good pace throughout the game. They're not jumping too far out ahead, or they're not keeping the game too close. They have a really good pace to their game. I like watching BYU. BYU is playing some good football right now.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, we talk about schedule and towards the end of the season, what's going to matter on your resume. The difference between Cincinnati being in the American Conference and BYU being an independent is on their schedule, Mitch, this year, they have 7 Power 5 opponents.
Right.
They've already played 3-0 against the Pac-12 South, Arizona State, Utah, Boise State this weekend. And then they're at Baylor, at Washington State, home against Virginia. And then the final game of the season, Thanksgiving weekend at USC. So if a BYU team's 12-0 at the end of the season, and you're looking at a schedule with a couple ranked wins, couple, you know, 7 P5 wins, and Boise State, who's a solid team, and Utah State, who's a solid, you know, not bad other teams on there. It's going to be hard to keep the Cougars out as well. And that's the difference between those two schedules is Cincinnati is relying on that Notre Dame win to be their signature win. BYU is going to rely on the depth of their whole schedule as a whole. If it comes to that point at the end of the season, beating all of those Power Five teams, which honestly, Mitch, a lot of these Power Five teams are not good. Arizona's not a good team. Washington State's not going to be a good team. It shouldn't matter that they're quote unquote Power Five wins for BYU, but that's just how college football works. And those will be, you know, sort of higher, held in higher regard, even if you know, Cincinnati beating UCF is a better win than both of those teams. So we'll see what the Cougars are able to do. But through five games, they've put themselves in a great spot and getting recognition from the AP voters here as they reach the top 10. Mitch, let's look ahead this week at a couple games to watch. Big games going on in the college football landscape. And let's begin with a very famous game, a very famous rivalry, the two teams departing the Big 12 to head to the SEC, number 6 Oklahoma, number 21 Texas, at the Cotton Bowl in the Red River Showdown. This should be a great matchup and huge for the Big 12. If they want to have a name in this college football race, it's going to have to be Oklahoma. Can Spencer Rattler look like that number one pick that we all expected? Can they get a big win against the rival in Texas? This should be a huge game.
Huge game, huge game. This could come down to be like the Spencer Rattler game. Can he will his team against the Texas Longhorns to a victory? I think he can. Texas has not played an exceptionally tough schedule. They just, you know, just a couple weeks ago, they beat Texas Tech 70-35. They came off the week before that, a 58-0 blowout of Rice. They do have the loss against Arkansas. So if you look at, if you want to compare what Arkansas is compared to what Texas is and knowing what Oklahoma is, Oklahoma should be winning this game. And it shouldn't be necessarily close. If there's an over, take the over, because I think Oklahoma is going to put up a lot of points on Texas. Texas defense isn't that impressive. As Spencer Rattler, when he's on, he's on. So this will be a fantastic game to watch, the Red River Showdown. But man, Oklahoma is going to be a tough team to pick against when they're playing a Texas Longhorns team that looks good on paper, but the defense really isn't that solid at all.
Yeah, no doubt. And Oklahoma, you know, number 6 in the country, but they haven't really been tested so far this season. Really haven't seen if they're that good. They've beat Nebraska, West Virginia, both those were one score. Kansas State, all those were one score games, right?
And they had that close game against Tulane.
And a close game in week one against Tulane, as you said. So first big test for Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler has not been the guy that people expected as a draft prospect heading into this next NFL draft. A chance for him to have a big coming out party here on ABC. 9 a.m. Pacific kick on that game if you want to watch it. Should be a fun game to watch. Mitch, go ahead.
I just want to make one last point about this game. To your point about you know, Oklahoma hasn't really been tested. Hasn't played a ranked opponent yet. And other than a 76-0 blowout over WCU, they have not had a game where a game has been decided by fewer or by more than, what is that? 7 points.
Right. One so score all, games.
They've all played close games except for the 76-0 blowout. So this would be a good test for them. You're right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Next game, Mitch, the two of the biggest losers from last week get a chance at redemption. Number 13 Arkansas, the Razorbacks, against the number 17 ranked Ole Miss Rebels. This, Mitch, a matchup for and a chance for two teams to redeem themselves, right? Embarrassing losses, as we mentioned. Arkansas shut out against Georgia, 42-21 loss for Ole Miss. Matt Corral, Heisman candidate, jumping up the draft boards at quarterback. How good is he? How good is this Arkansas team? I'm interested in this game to see who really bounces back. Both of those teams came against the two toughest teams in college football. You didn't expect them to win, but I didn't expect them to look that bad. How they respond after tough, disappointing losses is going to be key to showing how good these teams are. And we're going to find out on Saturday. This one also 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff here. Great. It should be a really solid matchup.
Yeah, very solid matchup. I love the I love Matt Corral. Matt Corral's so good at football. I'm trying to find the money line here on if you're betting college football.
Yeah.
Arkansas right now is +5.5. Ole Miss, lower ranked, -5.5. Over under set at 66.5. The money line right now for Ole Miss is -210. I like Ole Miss in this game. I like Ole Miss in this game.
Yeah, you know, it will be an interesting one. You mentioned Matt Corral, who's sort of having, you know, we haven't, it's not an exact copy, but a Zach Wilson-esque rise, a Joe Burrow-esque rise in the draft prospect world. As a guy who, and I say those two names specifically, obviously because they ended up, you know, top two players each, but guys who showed potential earlier in the career, who really put it together in a final year to build that momentum toward the NFL. Zach Wilson showed promise for the first 2 years, really exploded last year. Joe Burrow transfers from Ohio State, looked good in the first year at LSU, looked excellent the year two at LSU. Matt Corral has had moments in his college football career where he's shown some promise. It seems like it's finally coming together this year for him. And even as you mentioned his stat line earlier, what he looked like last week, it wasn't bad. And against Alabama, and that's pretty good, all things considered, you know. So I don't think, you know, he hasn't risen to the sort of heights that Burrow and Wilson were able to reach, but he's definitely a guy who could, in a big game against, you know, Arkansas this week, could definitely sort of put him in that stratosphere, if you will.
Absolutely. Arkansas's got two tough matchups coming up. They got Mississippi this week, and then they got number 18 Auburn the following week. So
there you go.
Two tough games for them.
Speaking of tough matchups, Mitch, this is definitely the best matchup of the week. Number four, Penn State at number three, Iowa. I mean, this is the Big Ten right here. There's a couple teams there's actually four teams in the top 10 for the Big Ten. These two teams, Penn State, Iowa, Ohio State, and Michigan. Michigan State also number 11, by the way. So just hanging around. So Big Ten should have some teams vying for a playoff spot, but with the Buckeyes lost to Oregon earlier this season, Penn State, Iowa seem to be the sort of leading candidates. Iowa's got a win over Iowa State, their rival, you know, earlier this season. And, you know, they've sort of dropped off a bit, but still an impressive win. A chance for both these teams to really make a statement, really put themselves in the driver's seat as the third best team behind Alabama and Georgia. Whoever comes out of this game victorious is going to solidify their argument there, Mitch. Hawkeyes. Nittany Lions. It'll be a fun one in Iowa, in Iowa City.
Yeah, I think Penn State has the more impressive resume coming into this game. Beat Wisconsin, which whether they're ranked or not, always seem to play big teams tough. They had the shutout against Indiana, and they got the W over number 18 Auburn. You know, they have the more impressive resume coming into this game, but I love this Iowa team. I mean, this Iowa defense is maybe not up with Georgia, but they're the next tier down.
It's got to be pretty damn close, I think.
And you're at the top of the very next tier down. I mean, this Iowa defense is fantastic. They're going to do exactly what they always do, which is kind of a program tradition, which is pound the football, run the football, and play good defense. This is going to be a smash mouth type of game. And I'm so excited for this matchup. This could be fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought Iowa's victory last week against Maryland, particularly impressive. Maryland, the Terrapins, have started off really strong. People had really thought this could be a sneaky good team in the Big Ten. They absolutely stymied what was a fantastic offense with the younger brother of Tua, Tualia Tagovailoa, who really struggled in that game, and that Maryland offense struggled. Iowa, Penn State should be a fun matchup, Mitch. Another fun matchup that's not high quality as Penn State, Iowa, but equally as entertaining, in my opinion, is the final game we want to mention this week. And it is UConn and UMass, Mitch. This is a 12:30 Pacific time kick against, and it features the 0-6 UConn Huskies and the 0-5 UMass Minutemen. Mitch, these might be the two worst teams in college football, and we lucky folks get to see them on the field against each other for the true crown of who is the worst. This should be a very interesting matchup. UMass, an independent team, has played a number of Power 5 teams, lost to BC and Pitt, lost to 17. Coastal Carolina, have scored just once, only once, in three of their five games this season, have only been able to score just once in the game. UConn 0-6, also an independent. couple of Power Five games for them. Lost to Purdue, lost a tough one to Vanderbilt last week. Already shut out twice this season. The Huskies have been once to Fresno State 45-0 and once to Purdue 49-0. So Mitch, couple really bad teams, but somebody's got to win. And that's what makes this so exciting.
Somebody's got to suck less. Somebody's got to suck less. Look, if Penn State, Iowa kicks off at 1, so I won't be watching this game. But
your priorities are wrong, Mitch.
No, I will be watching Penn State, Iowa way before I watch UConn, UMass, and they kick off a half hour from each other. I was just looking at ticket prices too. $20 is the low ticket to get into this.
There you go.
Like a bargain to get in. Do you know what the lowest ticket prices is in the country right now for this week?
What?
Georgia Southern at Troy. You could purchase a ticket for $7 to get into that game. So if you're living in the South Georgia area, or actually they're in Troy, and I don't even know where Troy's from.
Troy is Alabama. It's in the state of Alabama. I know.
Okay,
that.
So if you're in Alabama and you want to go see a Troy football game, you can get a ticket for $7 and watch them play Georgia Southern. So
what a treat!
How about that?
What a treat! Yeah, I do know, Mitch. In fact, last week I mentioned this game: UConn and Vanderbilt, horrible football team, even though they're a Power Five. There were tickets on sale for this Vanderbilt UConn game for a literal dollar.
Yeah.
For a literal dollar, I saw online people buying tickets to Vanderbilt and UConn. And that was a 30-28 game-winning field goal game. I mean, those guys got their money's worth and some there. What a great value. That's what I'm saying. Don't sleep on this. This could be the best game all week.
If you're in the San Diego area, you can go see a top 25 team in the country for $9. New Mexico visiting top 20 or number 25 San Diego State.
The Aztecs.
You can get a ticket for $9.
In Carson, right at the soccer stadium, they're building a new stadium down there at San Diego State. I believe they're playing their home games at the Carson where the Chargers played their home games before SoFi.
Dignity Health Sports Park. Yep.
So there you go. All right, Mitch. Before we wrap up here with the campus tour, every week I'm going to give you guys a player to know before the NFL draft. These are some of the guys that are emerging as some of the top draft prospects this season and in college football. We're going to start this
if you will an NIL, a name you love,
a name I love. We're not paying them to mention them here, but giving them a little love nonetheless. The first entry here, Mitch, is going to be defensive end Aiden Hutchinson from the Michigan Wolverines. 6'6", 265. Hutchinson's been a guy on draft radars for a couple years, had a big breakout season, if you will, in 2019 as a sophomore. 68 total tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks. Last season, a struggle, only played in 3 games. The COVID shortened year didn't do him any favors. He comes back for this year in 2021, and he has been on an absolute tear this season, Mitch. He's got 5.5 sacks through 5 games, 6 tackles for loss. He's been, I've even seen triple blocked, by the offense. They've got a tackle, a tight end, and a running back in there to stop this guy from getting to the quarterback. He's been that disruptive, and he's definitely emerged as a name to watch in the NFL draft. Kayvon Thibodeau, the edge player from Oregon, likely going to be the first edge player off the board in the NFL draft, may even be the number one pick when it's all said and done. But Aiden Hutchinson is a name that you're going to see more and more in the top 10, maybe even higher, depending on how he looks throughout the course of the season. So a guy to watch in the NFL draft at that edge rush position, Aiden Hutchinson, played a little inside pass rush last year, more in the interior of the defensive line. They've moved him out to a more traditional edge, and he has absolutely feasted this season. So,
I mean, 6'6", 265, he's got some length to him. That's J.J. Watt type length.
He's got the perfect size. He's got everything you'd want. And again, a guy who showed that flash earlier in his career has really put it all together here in his final season in college, setting himself up well for an NFL career. So a guy to watch if you're an NFL fan and you're sort of anticipating the NFL draft in April. We're going to be bringing you one name every week to watch. First one here, Aiden Hutchinson. Mitch, That's it for the campus tour. Before we get to quick picks, we do want to talk about the MLB postseason, which is underway right now, Mitch. It is Tuesday, October 5th. Boston and Yankees, Red Sox up 3-0 right now in the top of the fourth. As we're recording this, that's the first wild card game in the AL. Winner of that matchup will go on to face the Tampa Bay Rays. And the NL, Mitch, tomorrow night, we have the Cardinals at the Dodgers for a chance to take on the San Francisco Giants. So we sort of talked last week in the anticipation of the final week what to expect. Now that we're here, Mitch, let's just sort of look ahead at this postseason and some of these matchups. We don't know yet. New York, Boston against the Rays. I think both of us would feel confident in Tampa Bay. I know we both kind of mentioned that last week, that we feel pretty confident in the Rays and their ability to get it done. Let's focus here more on the other AL matchup that we know we have, which is the Astros and the White Sox. I said last week, Mitch, that my pick to come out of the AL was the Astros. And I still feel strong about this. But I think this is going to be a really tough matchup. I mean, this White Sox team has been incredible all season. They seem to be getting it done at every level. And two teams that were pretty tight during the regular season record-wise. You look at just sort of the quality of the team. I think this Astros-White Sox should be a great series. I still feel confident in the Astros moving forward with that experience. Going to a World Series, winning a World Series already. I think that's going to, you know, pay off in the end for the Astros, but this should be a good one.
This should be an exceptionally good one. White Sox going to be sneaky, They got guys like Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada, Adam Engel. They added, they got speed and Billy Hamilton, Eloy Jimenez, has been great for them. The pitching though, for the White Sox has been fantastic. You look at guys, you know, like, especially on the back end of the bullpen, like Aaron Bummer and Liam Hendricks, guys that just, you can always count on them to shut the game down when you need them to. That Astros lineup is going to be very tough, but I think this White Sox team is going to be really sneaky. I like the Astros too, it probably in this matchup, but don't count out the Sox. They might be very, very sneaky good. If this thing goes to, you know, goes to four or five games.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in this first sort of run for the White Sox here, we'll see how they handle it, but it should be more to come for them. But I expect a competitive first series as well, Mitch. You know, obviously we don't know the Yankees Red Sox winner, but just before we move on to the NL, feeling confident in the Rays, no matter who comes through, or you feel a little different on that?
Well, you saw the TikTok of, there was this whole conspiracy theory that Kevin Cash threw game 162 because he didn't want to face the Blue Jays. He'd rather face the Red Sox, the Yankees. But you brought up a very good point when we were talking about that before the pod, is that these are two proven winners. These are teams that know how to win in the postseason. Though the rosters may be different year in and year out, these are organizations that just know how to get it done. The Rays, they were World Series contenders last year. Okay, they were in the World Series. This is a team that is very well built, plays extremely well together. Kevin Cash has done a great job with that crew. But against a red hot Yankees or Red Sox team that comes on with a little bit of momentum, that's going to be a tough challenge for them. I don't know if I take the Rays in a 5-game series against the Yankees or the Red Sox. And it seems silly to say just because the Rays have been so solid all year long, but when you look at the pitching of the Yankees, the potent lineup that they have when they're all healthy, same thing goes for the Red Sox. Whoever comes out of this wild card game, I think, has taken this Rays team to five, and flip a coin on game five, because, you know, who knows what, who you roll out on the mound, who knows what the bullpen situation is going to be like after four games. This is going to be a very, very competitive ALDS.
Yeah, I would expect I'd expect the same as well. Competitive for both those division series matchups, no matter what. Still feel like the Rays will pull it through. I mean, they were the best team in the AL last year, and they were the best regular season team in the AL this year. So, I mean, I think they've proven that. We'll see how they handle the postseason, playing a division rival, playing a team that's just historically been much better than you, you know, over and over again. throughout your history, you know, can you beat one of those teams? Can you, you know, pull it out when you need to? We'll find out. But they should be competitive series. On to the NL real quick. Atlanta at Milwaukee. Last week you mentioned the Brewers as your sneaky, you know, NL pick. They could be really good. You still feeling confident in the Brewers in this series?
No, I think I think I got a little bit hyped up.
I love that.
I'm just gonna be honest. This Braves team is super good. Like, you know, I guess I just maybe didn't weigh into the fact that they might play the Atlanta Braves. Now the Atlanta Braves super streaky. Like we saw, they can go in cold spells. So maybe a few days off before they get this series rolling might not work in the Braves' favor. So I'm not super confident, but you know what? I'm going to roll with my Brewers pick here. I'm going to take the Brewers in five over the Braves. I think that they have enough to get it done, especially on the back end of the bullpen. And they play great defense. The defense of the Brewers is exceptional. So, I love this Brewers team. I love the Braves team, but I'm not as confident as I was last week. So, but I'm going to continue to roll with my Brewers pick.
Still sticking with them. Fair enough.
I stand with the Brewers.
I like it. You know, I feel good about this Braves team. You know, they've made some runs. I said this last year, they're a couple years away from getting that shot. I think they get past the Brewers. I think the Braves get past the Brewers, go to the NLCS. I don't think they get past the Giants or the Dodgers. No matter, you know, who they face. So that would be my concern for the Braves this year, is they might be able to get to the NLCS, but it's going to be tough to get to the World Series past one of those juggernauts. But I like Atlanta in this series, but it should be close. Brewers, Braves, solid matchup there. Should be a good one. The wild card game, Mitch, Cardinals at Dodgers. It's going to be the Dodgers, right?
I mean, I would love to just say that, yeah, sure, of course it is the Dodgers. But this Cardinals team,
I mean, there's always a chance they lose.
I mean, just tell the people what you told me before we started recording.
I don't want to play this game. I'm scared.
Yeah, you don't want to
play a one-game playoff, you know? Oh. That's what it's about. It's not about who you play. I mean, they could be playing the Orioles. I don't want to play anybody.
Welcome to my life as an Oakland A's fan.
Right. I mean,
stuck in the wild card game.
I get it.
This is a sneaky team that could pull one out.
So, the Cardinals are a good baseball team. 87 wins. You know, Adam Wainwright on the mound. He's been electric in the postseason. You've just got to win one game to give yourself the series.
I will say this. The NLDS goes one of two ways. The Cardinals win and it's over in three. Or the Dodgers win and we go to five games.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one of two ways that happens.
100%.
So I take the Dodgers in this one. I want to see the rivalry matchup in the NLDS. And I want to see the five game series. But if the Cardinals win, just chalk the Giants going to the NLCS, because they're a far superior team to what the Cardinals are right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, and here's the thing, the Dodgers tied the franchise record for wins this season, 106 wins. They set the record in 2019, by the way, 2 years ago. And unlike 2019, instead of winning the division by 20-something games, they lose the division by a game to the 107-win Giants, and now they find themselves in this wild card game. So I am nervous about having to play one game to win. I am not nervous about the Dodgers' ability to win this game and ultimately win the series against the Giants, which I expect them to do. So I'm picking the Dodgers to get past this one game, and I'm picking the Dodgers to beat the Giants. I think the Dodgers have had their number over the last 5-6 years, since the, you know, 10-12-14 runs that the Giants had earlier, you know, in the decade. The Dodgers have been the best team in the NL West since then. They've been to three World Series. They've won one. I don't see them losing this. They've only gotten better over the course of the season, in my opinion. So you got to get past this game, but man, is that a fun matchup. Man, is that a must-watch series. 106-win Dodgers, 107-win Giants, division, bitter rivals, division rivals, you know, duking it out in the NLDS. It will be a blast. And, you know, sorry for whoever gets out of the other series and has to face one of those two teams in the NLCS, because that'll not be an easy task for either the Brewers or the Braves.
No, not at all.
So, Mitch, that's it for the MLB postseason. We'll be updating as we go through, you know, every week as these series play themselves out. So we'll keep you abreast here of all that. Mitch, before we wrap up here, let's do the quick picks for this week. Right now, Mitch maintains his lead. He's up one in the quick picks. We both went 11-5 last week. We both went 11-5 the week before. So, a measure of consistency for us here in the quick picks.
Yeah, I think we're picking both above 75% right now too. So
not bad, not bad. Yeah, Mitch is 35-13 on the season. I am 34-14. And let us begin, Mitch, with Thursday night football. NFC West, the Los Angeles Rams, a disappointing loss to the Cardinals. And they've got to head up to Seattle, the rainy city, to take on the Seattle Seahawks. I know my parents are down on their Hawks, right? They're not feeling very positive. My dad texted me a couple weeks ago. He's like, we're not going to win another game this year. All right. Calm it down, guys.
Your mom texted us this weekend about it.
Yeah, she did. She did. She was feeling good about the win. Russell Wilson avoided 1-3 beating the Niners. I can't see another win, though. Give me the Rams bouncing back from the tough loss the week before. On the road, Matthew Stafford throws for 350-3 in what should be a great Thursday night football game. But give me the Rams.
Yeah, I am taking the Rams as well in the Emerald City. Good bounce back win for them, and a great quality win for the Rams.
Oi, mate, let's go to London now. London football. And we got the New York Jets, the Jets of New York, taking on the Falcons of Atlanta, Hotlanta, as they call it in America. Give me the Jets in London in what should be a stinker, an absolute poo-poo of a game, garbage game of the week.
This is just hot garbage, straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Mitch, I think if you're going to do the accent, you actually have to call it rubbish game of the week.
Game of the week.
I don't think we can call it garbage. I think we have to call it the rubbish game of the week. Yeah, you know, this first London game, first international game of the year, first London game, Zach Wilson, Matt Ryan, very exciting matchup here. But it is garbage game of the week because a couple teams who have struggled, to say the least, early on in the season. But the Jets, Zach Wilson. Win number one last week against the Titans. Win number two coming this week. Give me the Jets. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. This Falcon team is a mess. Speaking of, I mean, Matt Ryan hasn't been awful. He hasn't been Big Ben level, but like, I mean, it might be coming here for Matt Ryan as well. You know, that old quarterback age maybe creeping in, but this should not be a fun game. If you're waking up at 7:30 in the morning, whatever the West Coast time is to watch this game, and you're not a Jets or Falcons fan, something's wrong with you. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a Zach Wilson fan. I'm not waking up to watch this game.
Yeah,
I'm just not.
It's bad.
I'm just not.
It's rubbish.
It is great. Great point, Mitch. Also, the accent, Mitch, like a 3 out of 10, needs some work, but I appreciate you trying it. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah, you tried it. All right, Mitch. Next game here. NFC North matchup. The Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota coming off a disappointing loss the week before. Kirk Cousins, the offense has been looking good. Get it back this week against a really bad Lions team. Like, really bad. Minnesota Vikings at home.
Yeah, I got Minnesota at home as well. It's a home game. It's a bounce back win game against a divisional rival. Got to get it done. Give me the Vikings at home. Following that game, we have the New Orleans Saints. They're leaving the Big Easy and heading over to the nation's capital to take on the football team, the Washington football team. Give me Washington to win this game at home. I don't like this Saints team at all. I mean, they are just way too hot and cold. I think they're going to be one of those teams that's like, oh, they won 2 or 3 games in a row. They look good. And then it's a complete farce because we look at the teams that they played and they've been absolute crap. So Washington, a much better football team in a much better situation, being at home. Give me the Redskins. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm sorry,
America. It happens. I heard Steve Young call the Chargers the San Diego Chargers on Monday Night Football as he's making his pick. He's like, give me San Diego. And I was like, see, it's, you know.
Look, I just don't want to. I just don't want to get canceled.
Listen, you're fine, Mitch. You're fine. Yes, the Washington football team. You know, I respect the pick, Mitch. Scary Terry having a great season so far. Terry McLaurin there. Taylor Heinicke. Not a lot of drop off from Ryan Fitzpatrick. I will say that. Not a lot of different, if we're being honest, between those two guys. I think he's been
more athletic than anything.
Absolutely, absolutely. Both these teams 2-2. Both teams looking for a win. I've said this all season, Mitch. Saints are going to win one, lose one. They've won one, lost one all year. They lost last week. That means it is a dub for the Saints. Give me New Orleans in this game because that is the pattern, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
Next up on the matchups, Mitch, should not be a good game. This is pretty close for garbage game of the week, if we're being honest. Any game that involves the Houston Texans is eligible for a garbage game of the week. But the Houston Texans hosting the 1-3 New England Patriots. Belichick, embarrassed by Brady in Foxborough, wants a chance to bounce back. And unfortunately for Davis Mills, he's going to be on the other side of that one. So give me the Patriots getting it done at Reliance Stadium in Houston over the Texans. Getting to 2-3 on the season for the Patriots and another win for the rookie Mac Jones.
Yeah, Patriots. Why would I ever pick the Texans? Why would I ever pick the Texans? You just can't never pick them. So,
not if you want to win this quick picks, you don't.
Enough of that garbage. All right. Following that game, Miami, they're leaving the state of Florida, the Sunshine State, to head over to. Oh, no, they're staying in the Sunshine State to head over to Tampa Bay. They're going right up the road to pick on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Give me Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay in an easy win. Should walk all over them. Tampa Bay by 20.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a tough matchup for Miami as they cross the peninsula there to the other side. Got to go to the Gulf side here to get to the Bay Area, Tampa Bay, St. Petersburg. But Tampa Bay 3-1 on the season, looking to continue their strong start to the season, and they're going to get it done against this 1-3 Miami team. Jacoby Brissett likely starting. Maybe it's Tua this week. Maybe it's another week off, but. Either way, I mean, if it's Tua coming back in his first start, missing a couple weeks, I mean, you're playing this Bucs defense, Mitch. This Bucs defense is for real. And their run defense. Go look up the run defense stats. They are by and far the best run defense in the league right now. And when you can make any team one-dimensional, you're really putting yourself at an advantage. So Bucs here at home getting it done in a great matchup of Floridian football teams. Coming up next, Mitch, Midwestern teams here. We've got the Green Bay Packers in Wisconsin. They're heading down to get some Skyline Chili in Cincinnati. The worst city in Ohio.
Who doesn't love a good chili, though?
If you put spaghetti noodles in it, maybe not. And that's exactly what they do there. So I guess, I don't know. I haven't tried it. I'm not going to judge yet. Doesn't sound great. But hey, Packers, Bengals. Getting it done on Thursday night against the Jags. But this is a whole different beast here. Give me the Packers. This should be a close game, though. Cincinnati, 3-1 on the season. They've been really competitive. I've been impressed with their start. But after a lackluster week one, the Packers have looked, exactly what we would expect. I don't see that changing any bit. So give me the Packers on the road.
Yeah, give me the Pack on the road, too. They got to deal with that bad man, Aaron Rodgers. He's a bad man, and he's definitely shown in the last few weeks that he wants to go out a winner in Green Bay. So give me the Packers on the road in Cincinnati. Following that game, the Denver Broncos, they're leaving Mile High and headed over to the Steel City to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Give me Denver on the road in the big catch-up bottle. I shouldn't say that. I hate Pittsburgh's team. As a whole, Pittsburgh, not a good football team, and I will die on that hill until they prove me otherwise. Give me Denver on the road.
Yeah, this is a tough one, Mitch, because Broncos are 3-1.
But not Teddy Bridgewater.
But no Teddy Bridgewater, who gets knocked out of last week's game against Baltimore. Drew Lock comes in and he doesn't look great. So we're talking about Drew Lock against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, which just not sound promising. But on the other hand, we have the Steelers offense and Big Ben against this really good Broncos defense. So, you know, it's kind of a tough call either way. The over-under I'm seeing on ESPN, Mitch, is 39.5.
Yikes.
Seems way too high. I mean, I legitimately think this is going to be a 13-10 game. Like, there's no way this reaches 40 points. So pound the under here on that, folks. But give me the Steelers to get it done at home. Steelers at home in a low-scoring affair against two high-quality defenses and two probably pretty bad offenses.
Hey, and the big ketchup bottle, you can't pick against the Steelers.
It's a tough place to play there, that's for sure. Mitch, next game, Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Hurts, headed down to Carolina to take on the Carolina Panthers. 3-1 for the Panthers this season, suffering their first loss last week to the Cowboys. I think they bounce back, though, Mitch. Give me the Panthers at home to improve to 4-1. This Philly team, 1-3 on the season. They get that opening statement win against the Falcons. But since then, struggled against the Niners, struggled against the Cowboys. Against the Chiefs, they were able to put up points. And we talked about how bad this Chiefs defense is. They were able to put up points, but that defense couldn't do anything against the Chiefs. And this offense for Carolina, not too bad. Got plenty of weapons to get it to there. So I think it'll be a struggle for the Eagles defensively. Give me the Panthers at home.
Yeah, I think it's tough to say it was a statement win against the Falcons when the Falcons are that bad. And then they followed up with three losses in a row to pretty competent teams. Give me Carolina at home. Keep pounding. Panthers get this one done against the Eagles. Following that, Tennessee, the Titans, they're leaving Music City and heading down to where, Dallin?
The swamps of Jacksonville.
You're damn right. They're going to the swamps of Jacksonville to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Urban Meyer won't be able to play call, do anything, because he'll just be thinking about that blonde girl grinding on his flap the entire time. Give me the Titans in a blowout win over the Jacksonville Jaguars, because Urban Meyer will be too distracted by his new girlfriend.
You know, part of me wanted to pick the Jags here, right? With all that's going on, you're like, and then somehow they just get it done against Tennessee. And Tennessee loses last week to the Jets, in large part because no Julio Jones, no A.J. Brown. And we talked about, I meant this, the biggest weakness to me on this Titans team was the depth after those two wide receivers. If you lose those, what are you going to do? We saw it last week. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't get it done in the end with no pass catching options, relying on Derrick Henry to run the ball. That's not necessarily a winning formula week in and week out. Whether those guys are in this game or not, Mitch, I'm picking the Titans. Because Urban Meyer's got too much going on right now. Is he even going to be at the game? If you're a bar or a saloon or a tavern or any sort of establishment selling alcohol, inviting young people out there in the Jacksonville area, the Jacksonville metro greater area, please keep your bouncers outside looking for a 57-year-old man by the name of Urban Meyer and kick his ass out, okay? He shouldn't be in there. If it's Friday night, Saturday night, I don't care what night it is. If it's Monday after the game, I don't care. Just keep him out. Put his picture up there. Say you're not invited.
The man has a family, for God's sake.
We just gotta help him out. Clearly he's confused. Clearly he doesn't have the self-control he needs. I'm just saying, as a friendly reminder for all those businesses out there, help your guy out. Keep him out of the bars. Maybe they'll get a win. But I'm taking the Titans in this one, Mitch. How could you pick the Jags right now? How could you?
You can't.
It's impossible. It's impossible. Mitch, we go on to the afternoon slate of games. Cleveland at the Chargers. And honestly, one of the best matchups we have this week. Not game of the week.
Runner up, I would say. Runner up for game of the week, I think.
Not game of the week, but runner up. I it's pretty close there. I could feel you there. 3-1 Chargers, 3-1 Browns. Chargers at home make me want to lean LA a bit here, Mitch, but I believe in the Browns and I believe in how good this defense is. And I believe and Myles Garrett. And listen, Rashawn Slater, left tackle, he's been great for the Chargers. But they're starting a kid by the name of Storm Norton on the other side. And it has been a struggle for Storm early on. And whether it's Myles Garrett or Jadeveon Clowney on that kid, it's going to be a long day. Give me the Browns in a big statement win on the road.
Yeah, I mean, Browns by 2 scores. And I think,
wow, kind of, okay, a big win.
Well, and I think it's going to be a cheap 2 scores. I think it's going to be like a 10-point win. So, okay, like, sure, the closest possibility you could get
your
on
hedge. I like how you're sort of, you know, trying to straddle, yeah, the line here a bit.
I say 10 to 13 point win for the Browns, but you're right, big statement win, because this Chargers team is good. Their defense is really good. But I think that Browns team, that Browns defense is just as good, if not better than the Chargers. And it's that offense is better than the Chargers offense. So I do like Cleveland on the road, getting the win over the Chargers. Dallin, I'm going to need you to hit my sad music. You know, here on the Sports Hour, it's a time-honored tradition that no matter what the circumstances, I stand with the Bears. I bear down no matter what. It's hard to bear down with this team right now. And I'm not saying that I'm bailing on the Bears, because the Bears are my Bears. I will never leave the Bears. But they got the Las Vegas Raiders this week, a team that's very for real. Dallin, I'm not picking the Bears this week.
What?
Give me the Raiders at home.
What? Are you all right, my friend? Is everything okay?
I'm not.
Matt Nagy hurt you this bad?
Things are not okay. Things are not okay in Mitch Moe's world right now. The Bears aren't good. The Bears aren't good. And I, as much as I would love to pick the Bears here, because, you know, we always bear down, I can't take the Bears. I just can't.
Wow.
Give me Chucky. Give me Chucky and the Raiders at home.
Wow, Mitch, you're going to bail on the Bears.
I'm not bailing.
On the Bears. Baylor Bears. You can't bail on the Bears, Mitch. No. Not the Baylor Bears or the Chicago Bears.
You know I always bear down, okay? And I will bear down on Sunday. If I am wrong on this prediction, I will be happy about it. But for the sake of competition, I can't take the Bears.
Wow. You're that serious about the quick picks, which I respect.
For the first time in Sports Hour history, I'm not taking the Bears.
Wow. What a moment. But I hope the Bears win 40-10. I hope they just crush the Raiders.
I hope so, too. I hope I'm wrong.
It's not going to happen, Mitch. It's not going to happen.
I'm picking the Raiders, but one more time before we move on. Bear down.
Okay. That's fine. I'm picking the Raiders as well, because I'm no fool, and I pick winning teams. So Raiders at home by a lot, Mitch. Sorry. All right. Next game, NFC West. This is another good one. This is arguably, you know, another contender for best game of the week here. San Francisco 49ers and the Arizona Cardinals. Mind you too, Mitch, this isn't going to be likely Jimmy G in the San Francisco 49ers, but Trey Lance in his first career NFL start against Kyler Murray. I mean, talk about exciting young quarterbacks with athletic, you know, running ability, all the things that they bring, the big arms. This could be a really fun matchup. Arizona, the only undefeated team in the NFL this season until this week. Give me the San Francisco 49ers in Trey Lance's NFL debut, taking down the Cardinals. Mitch, the Cardinals are riding high. They just beat the Rams. Oh. They're feeling cocky. They're feeling themselves. They're going back home, and they're thinking, rookie quarterback, we got this. This division is ours. And they're going to overlook what is a very good team. A very good team. Give me the Niners in the upset of the week.
I love your boldness. But Kyler Murray is going to be the next guy that we call that bad man. Kyler Murray is a bad man over there in Arizona. Arizona in a close one over San Francisco at home. Give me the Cardinals. Look, I can't, a rookie in his first start, tough to pick. And I commend you on your ballsiness to take a rookie in his first career NFL start, but can't do it. Got to give me the Cardinals here at home. Following that game, a classic NFC East matchup. And it feels gross to say that because it's the New York Giants taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Hey, we them boys. Give me the Cowboys at home against the Giants.
Yeah, I thought the Cowboys had an impressive win against the Panthers last week. Just prove, you know, the Panthers defense had been so good through three games. And Dallas put, what, like 34 points on them? Like nothing. They could have put up more by the end of that game, too, I thought. So this Cowboys offense is legit. It's legitimately a top five, top 10 unit in the NFL. And it's going to keep them in every game, and it's going to help them win a lot of games. And I think we're going to see the same thing this week. High scoring affair in this one. Over under is 52. I mean, pound the over in this game. I think both teams score 30 plus and the Cowboys get the win at home over the Giants.
I don't want to touch the over under. I don't think I want to touch the over under. Like if I'm betting, I can't legally because I'm in California, but you know, I, which by the way is ridiculous. We should be able to sports bet in California, but I don't want to touch the over-under on this because it just screams too much of the Cowboys putting up 30-something and, you know, the Giants
score seven.
Yeah, that's what it screams. Mean,
fair enough. Hey, fair enough. At 52, that's a tricky line there, right? That's a good spot for that line because yeah, it does make you think about that.
But I will take the Cowboys to cover. Okay. So,
all righty.
I don't know what that is, but I think I would take him to cover.
Yeah. All right. Well, we both picked Cowboys in that game. Mitch, game of the week here on Sunday Night Football. We've had some great primetime games this year. Sunday Night Football has been excellent every week this year, and it continues here. Buffalo, the Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen, in an AFC Championship game rematch from a season ago. Buffalo, Kansas City, Chiefs are struggling. 2-2, last place in the AFC West. We just talked about the AFC East. Basically a lock.
Bless you.
For the Bills at this point. Give me the Chiefs though, Mitch. Right when we're doubting them, right when we're praising the Bills, the run offense, the passing offense, the defense, things are rolling for Buffalo. The Chiefs are struggling. That defense is awful. It's not going to matter in this one. Patrick Mahomes is going to get it done in a shootout. Give me the Chiefs.
What's the over-under in that game?
Over-under in this game, 56.5.
Hammer the over.
Chiefs -2.5 at home.
Hammer the over. This will be my underdog lock of the week. Bills +2.5. Give me the Bills on the road to cover by a score.
Wow. So
I think that's a really smart line to bet because it could be a field goal game. So take, you know, give me the Bills on the road against Kansas City. You know, just it's hard to pick against them right now. It's hard to pick against them. Following that game, Monday Night Football. Oh, by the way, that was game of the week.
Yes. Yeah, I said that.
Oh, okay. Following that game, Monday Night Football, Indianapolis. They're leaving the state of Indiana to head over to Baltimore to take on the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens got to get back on track. I think this is a good football team, a winning football team, and I think this is the time to get it. I'm not a believer in the Colts anymore. Screw the Colts. They're dead to me. Give me the Baltimore Ravens at home on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, you know, tough look if you're taking the Colts in this one. Just tough look if you're taking the Colts in this one. They're 1-3, get their first win last week against a depleted Dolphins team. And it, you know, hasn't been an easy schedule for the Colts, to give them some credit. Seahawks, Rams, Titans, first 3 weeks, 0-3. But this is a really good Baltimore Ravens team who lost week one on Monday night against the Raiders and have followed that up with three straight wins themselves, including a win against the Kansas City Chiefs. So I think Baltimore's rolling right now. I think Lamar's played pretty well. They have to figure out this running back spot. They keep cycling through guys. I don't like that. Give my guy Tyson Williams a shot. Okay, the undrafted rookie out of BYU, North Carolina, South Carolina. Give him a shot. Why are we bringing in Lev Bell? Why are we bringing in all these other guys? Give the kid, he's been in here. He's been in here for a year and a half now. Give him a shot. Either way, the Ravens are going to win this game, Mitch. It's hard to pick the Colts right now, as good as they could be, as good as they might be. This Ravens team at home, that's a tough matchup. So both picking Baltimore here on Monday night to wrap up the quick picks, Mitch. That's it for quick picks. And that's it for the podcast today. We appreciate you guys sticking around and listening. Fun to talk a little more college football. And as we said, the campus tour will be taking place every week here on the Sports Hour. So look forward to those updates, as well as our regular updates on the NFL, NBA, and MLB seasons. Mitch, NBA preseason begun this week. So we are just a couple weeks away from the beginning of the NBA season. So look forward to some NBA previews here in the next couple weeks as it comes time for that. And just our normal updates on the MLB postseason and everything else going on in the sports world. Mitch, tell the people where they can find us on the interweb.
If you haven't already, shame on you. But go ahead and find us right here at the Sports Hour on Instagram, at Sports Hour Guys, or sorry, at the Sports Hour Guys on Instagram, Sports Hour Guys on Twitter. Keep your eyes out for that website. You can go follow us and be a supporter on Anchor at anchor.fm/the Sports Hour Guys. Be a contributor to the show. Go ahead and leave us a voice message on there. Be a part of the conversation. We want to hear from you guys. We'll be posting more questions on Instagram so that you guys can be a part of the conversation, part of the show. We want to hear from you. If you haven't already, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Tell us we suck, because Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better. Tell us we suck.
Yes, please. We would love that. Yes, please do that. And follow our TikTok as well, Mitch, at the Sports Hour Guys, right?
That's right. The TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah. We good, fun stuff. We might involve the TikTok tier. You know, we always do a punishment for the quick picks, still sort of mulling ideas, but it might involve the TikTok. And you can only imagine the sort of fun stuff we could come up with there. So if you don't already, shoot us the follow there. But Mitch, this has been a pleasure. As always, my friend, good to do this podcast with you. Good to be here for you people listening. Happy October. Go eat some pumpkin stuff, but also enjoy other fall things. There's more than pumpkin. That's all I'm saying. You know, yeah. Apple, great flavors, all kinds of spices.
You know, it's maybe even start eggnog season a little early.
Oh, why not? Eggnog, it should be eggnog season all year round, right, Mitch?
I know, right? If it was eggnog season in July, absolutely.
I'm sipping some nog in July.
I love nog. Nog is the best.
I'm nogging all summer. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Hot. Yeah. It's nog summer next year. Nog summer.
Hot nog summer.
Hot nog summer. No, not hot nog. That's,
I don't know. I was about to say, I've never heated up my eggnog. I don't that's want not a look nog. I want to try. Just turn into a custard at that point. But anyway, guys,
don't ruin nog for me.
Alrighty, that's going to do it, guys. We appreciate you sticking around, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!